This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hello and welcome to the latest in LGBTIQ plus health and policy, the podcast that brings you conversations with leading voices in LGBTIQ plus health and well-being. I'm your host, Triana Butler. Thanks so much for joining me today. In this episode of the latest, we are joined by Dr. Ryan Storr, a research fellow at Swinburne University and the co-founder of Proud to Play, a group that advocates for LGBTIQ plus inclusion in sport. Dr. Storr completed his PhD at Victoria University, where he was awarded the Most Outstanding Doctorate by the Graduate Management Association of Australia in 2019. He is officially an award winner, very sports-like of him. We're going to be chatting about the key findings from his Free to Exist report, which highlights the high rates of discrimination that are faced by LGBTIQA plus young people in sports and the decline in their participation post the COVID pandemic. Dr. Storr will also share insights into the motivations behind LGBTIQA plus youth engaging in physical activities and the importance of creating safe, inclusive environments in sports settings. Dr. Ryan Storr, thank you so much for joining us. I know there is a lot about you there in the intro, but in your own words, who is Ryan Storr? Tell us about yourself and the work that you do.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for having me. It's great to be on the podcast. I forgot I must have given someone that bio because I even forgot I've won that award for my PhD. So that was a nice reminder. But who am I? So I am what I identify as a pracademic. So I am an academic and do research via the university, but I have a very applied and practical application of my research. So most of the research I do is either industry funded or collaborative with not-for-profits, organizations, LGBT community groups, those type of things. So in a nutshell, I do research to provide evidence for the sports sector and organizations around diversity, equity, and inclusion, but a specific focus on LGBTIQA plus communities. So that can be anything from research evaluations, assessments and climates and current discrimination rates, which we're going to talk about today, and research projects to try and get data on work within our communities, what can be done to try and increase participation, all those type of things. So it's very driven by data to help sports organizations engage with our communities.
Now, you've just published the Free to Exist report, which highlights the rates of discrimination that are faced by LGBTQIA plus young people in sports, and particularly the decline in their participation post COVID-19. Tell us about the key findings of the report.
Yeah, so look, we specifically explored two things. One was around participation rates. So how many LGBTIQA plus people participate in sport and engage in physical activity? We've never had this research data before. There's some indications from the US and the UK and things, but it was one of the first Australian studies to actually document that, because many of the other kind of bits of research, for example, Ausplayer data, which is from the Australian Sport Commission, which documents and signals how many Australians are playing sport. But as with most things in the census, it doesn't ask questions around sexual orientation or gender identity. So on the one hand, we had questions around participation rates. And then the second one was to explore discrimination. So the major study 10 years ago out in the fields documented around discrimination levels, around homophobia in particular. So we're kind of doing an official follow-up to see where we are 10 years later.
Tell me about some of the key findings from that report then.
So first of all, with the participation rates and levels, US data suggests that LGBTIQA plus people, especially young people, participate in sport at around 50% less than the wider population who are heterosexual and cisgender. We found the same thing. So general population is around above 60% or 64%, and we found it was around 34%. So it's in essence around half. So half of LGBTIQA plus people play sport and engage in physical activity. So, and that was from a sample of young people from age 16 to 25, and we had about 505 young people in the sample. So that's kind of what other countries show. So it fits. And then discrimination rate. So 10 years ago, the Out in the Fields report showed that discrimination was around about 75 to 80%. And then now across the board, it's come down to just over 50%. I think it was about 53%. So we've seen a difference. However, when you dissect the data, unfortunately, gay men's experiences and witnessing of homophobia is around 73%. So there's been no difference in 10 years. And it identifies that male team sports environments in particular are still bad, or if not worse in some instances, because I'm conscious of the current climate we're in around masculinities and the manosphere and violence towards women. I think, unfortunately, homophobia goes hand in hand with that.
So what is it about when those environments are, you know, existing in the world the way they are, what is it that kind of fosters so much of that discrimination? Like, what needs to change, I guess, is my question.
Yeah. Look, there's some interesting conversations going on now around, as I kind of just mentioned, around young teenage boys and that healthy masculinities as opposed to toxic masculinities, and what can be done to engage young boys so they don't look up to the likes of Andrew Tate and things like that. Because interestingly, young teenage boys in groups are the main perpetrators and actors of homophobia and transphobia in particular. So sport is a key place where young boys get together in teams and are a part of those cultures and environments. So sport is basically like a breeding ground and has all the recipes and ingredients to enact and to promote homophobia. And sometimes it can be nuanced. And one example I'll give is that it's been some research that kind of looked into young boys in particular and homophobia. And one of the findings was around young boys and men don't always use homophobic terms or slurs to cause harm, but it's more the culture and group of young boys is using homophobic language that they want to use it to fit in and express their form of masculinity. That's not great and it's still bad, but it's an interesting explanation, because then often it leads us to then thinking about what can we do to kind of promote more healthier masculinities and perceptions of it that teach young boys that they don't need to use homophobic language to be a man.
What kind of trends have you observed in sport participation among LGBTIQA plus youth, especially in the wake of the COVID pandemic? Now, obviously, you touched on the discrimination that is still there. What other kind of trends are in there?
So some of the trends include, so generally there's always a kind of cliff dive of participation from young people going into teenage years, especially teenage girls. So our kind of data shows something similar, and that when a lot of young people do engage in sport and physical activity through school or extracurricular sport or sports clubs, they often do it through youth, either because they're doing it at school, they've got friends, they might not have come out yet, so it might not necessarily be an issue. But then as soon as they kind of go to university, they often drop out, or they have experiences that aren't positive and they're like, no, sport is not a safe place for me. So many of them who did compete, especially around the competition lens, don't ever compete afterwards. So we're losing a lot of LGBTIQA plus people to competitive sport, because then when they do engage, it's normally either in queer sports clubs or LGBTIQA plus friendly clubs. And it's often more formal socializing, meeting friends, those type of things, as opposed to the competitive element. So in a nutshell and summary, the sports sector is losing a lot of LGBTIQA plus young people who play sport in their teenage years and then don't ever kind of return to it or drop out completely.
We're speaking with Dr. Ryan Storr, Research Fellow at Swinburne University and co-founder of Proud to Play, a group advocating for LGBTIQ plus inclusion in sport. Ryan, what was it that motivated you to launch Proud to Play in the first place? Tell us a little bit about the org.
Yeah, so I was doing my PhD 2014-2017, so a while ago now. And I was doing it around diversity and inclusion and how community sport clubs and their volunteers respond to diversity policies and implement them. So I very much looked at what does it mean for a local sport club to do diversity and to be inclusive. And one thing that I found was that there was lots of things happening, unfortunately, racism, homophobia, ableism, sexism, all those type of things. But when incidents of homophobia came up, or I would ask them about it, or say, oh, what happened there? Or did anything get followed up with? The general consensus was, we don't talk about that. We just gloss over it. So there was just this silence around homophobia in particular. And as a gay man in sport, I was kind of like, something needs to happen and we need to change culture and things. So at the time, especially in Victoria, there wasn't really any peak organisation or advocacy body doing work in the space. So I kind of set it up with my colleague James at the time. And it was really to help be an advocacy body and raise awareness around homophobia, but then also to support the sports sector in doing this work. Because I would have many conversations with sports and they're like, look, we actually want to do something, but we have no idea where to start. Like, we don't know anything about this topic. So it was very much done in that regard to support the sports sector. And we did have a focus on young people as well, because the youth environment, yeah, is challenging. Because interestingly, 80% of sport participation is with under 18s.
Sorry, 80% of it?
Yeah. So only 20% of sport participation is adults, according to Vic Health data. So 80% of sport participation is under 18s. So when we talk about sport and homophobia and all these type of things, it's primarily youth junior sport because that's where it's happening. Not actually that many adults play sport.
So with that in mind, what are some of the strategies that have been used that, or programs that have been really effective in promoting LGBTIQA plus inclusion in sports? Like, are there particular initiatives that you've been behind maybe at Proud to Play, or are there things that have worked elsewhere around the world? Like, what's the North Star here?
Look, one thing I'll say is having proper policies and procedures and those type of things in place. If you don't have those policies and processes, then it makes it very difficult to do this work. Look, one thing that stands out is that for many years, and even you sometimes still see it now with certain Pride games, there's no engagement or consultation with LGBTIQA plus communities. So many sports still think, we think LGBTIQA plus people will want this or will do this, so we'll do this. And they don't speak to them. There's no community development. And often it's probably always geared to maybe low-hanging fruit, let's say, with lesbian communities, because there's an assumption that lesbians play sport, so we're going to try and tailor it towards that. But they're targeting maybe gay men without actually like addressing the culture within sport generally, and often they don't address or engage with the needs of trans and gender diverse people. So, and look, it's hard to appeal to all of kind of those, because what a lesbian wants is different from what a gay man might want or a trans and gender diverse person. So I think engaging with communities and a lot of the projects that have been successful for Proud to Play have been around, yeah, community development, engaging people within all parts of the kind of planning and process, doing it for their needs, what they want, informal, flexible, and based around kind of fun, meeting new people and those type of things. And that's where we've seen success and great participation in what we would call fringe sports. So Climbing Cuties, the rock climbing group, roller derby, ultimate frisbee. Like, all those sports are attracting a lot of queer communities in particular. And when you scratch the surface, they've got the best policies, they've got diverse people on their committees, they've got LGBTIQA plus role models as coaches and things, and you just don't get that in mainstream sports clubs. So I think the what we call the fringe sports or the smaller sports are the what you kind of identified as North Star sports need to be replicating some of their practices, because some of those clubs and meetups, there are a lot of people there.
So what's stopping one of the big sporting codes or one of the big sporting clubs from going and chatting with one of those groups and saying, hey, how do we do what you're doing?
We're starting to see it. So I think the club is escaping me at the minute, but they're one of the biggest queer clubs, and they've just moved into netball, and they have basketball. Queer Sport Alliance, QSA. Yeah. So they did basketball and they've moved into other sports, but they now have a partnership with Netball Victoria where they're doing netball leagues as well. So that's a good example of it. But look, unfortunately, most of my research shows that LGBTIQA plus inclusion is basically on the bottom of the pile around diversity and inclusion. It's seen as too difficult, politicized. People don't want to have to respond to backlash if they put a statement out about pride and things like that. So many sports just don't get to it because they don't see it as a viable option for them from a business perspective. Like, oh, it's not as big numbers as other communities, let's say. So it stops them from doing the work that they need to do, even though there are good examples of when sports have engaged and done it well, and their sport has grown and they've got participants from it and all sorts. Like, we had a big project with La Crosse Victoria and they didn't do anything. And they started from scratch and they were like, we want to do this work. And then we applied for a grant with Vic Health and they targeted university students. And then now they have a big like Pride Cup type activation. And it's been going 3 or 4 years and they've really grown their sport and made it LGBT inclusive. And they got a gold award at the Pride and Sport Awards. And they've literally a staff of 6 people. So you don't need millions of dollars to do this work. You just need a commitment and the right people and the right support in place, for example. So
looking forward, you know, as we look towards different sports codes or different sports clubs, what kind of changes or improvements do you hope to see in the sports sector to better support LGBTIQA plus young people?
So I think one of the key things is that, and I speak about this in like forums and when I'm doing keynotes and things like that, I think the sports sector in the last several years has been so focused on being inclusive in respect of working towards being inclusive of LGBTIQA plus communities by, for example, developing policies, doing work around like maybe pride activations or pride games, changing registration forms to be inclusive of trans and gender diverse people, right? They are all needed and inclusion work needs to happen. But in the pursuit of inclusion, they forgot to address the number one barrier, which why people don't participate, and that's discrimination and homophobia and transphobia in particular. So what we're seeing is homophobia, biphobia, transphobia increasing in some parts and are not going anywhere, but nothing is being done to address them. So homophobia in sport is not going to go away unless we have anti-homophobia initiatives and approaches that tackle it. But this idea of it's just going to go away naturally without any work is not going to work. So the main things that need to happen are anti-homophobia and anti-transphobia initiatives. If we're not addressing the homophobia, it's going to make it very difficult to do the transphobia. So it needs to happen at the same time, but we need to do that because the main reasons why young people aren't going to certain sports or dropping out is because of discrimination or those environments that kind of tell people, oh, you can play sport, but just don't tell anyone about your identity, for example, because someone might make a comment or you might be treated differently. So they have to keep their identity hidden, which is like minority stress. So ultimately, you're kind of always on guard and it has negative impacts on mental health and things like that. So we need LGBTIQA plus people to be able to play sport in environments where they can be themselves. And look, that's the main takeaway from the report that we did. It was called Free to Exist, because the main feedback that all the young people spoke about was, we kind of said, what would you like from your sport participation? What do you want? What's your message for sport organizers and administrators to facilitate more LGBTIQA young people to play sport? And they said, we just want to be free to exist. We don't want our identities challenged, questioned, debated on forums, having national debates about trans rights and their existence. We just want to be able to exist. And I think it's a pretty damning indictment of the sports sector when you've got a cohort of young people who just want to exist. Like, it's on reflection, it's pretty bad. But if these sports can take anything away from that, we need young people just to be able to be themselves and be supported. Be able to flourish and then actually play sport into adulthood, because we know that's a key factor. If they don't have that kind of continuity, it's hard to re-engage them.
Well, with that in mind, real quick, let's say we put you in charge of your favorite sporting club or your favorite sporting code, and you're now the CEO and you're in charge of it, and you've got the ability to make whatever call you want to make. What do you change? What are like the first two or three things you put in place?
So look, I'm a tennis player and I do actually do a lot of work with Tennis Australia. And I would say they are definitely leading the way in the diversity space and LGBTIQA plus space. But if I was Craig Tiley, for example, and I had to introduce new things, it would be very much around maybe supporting and introducing anti-homophobia initiatives across community sport clubs, because that's where these things are playing out. So I would develop some initiatives there, and I would also develop consistent policies. And an example is, we saw in AFL last year, there was 4 incidents of homophobic language in the men's AFL competition. One time they got a ban. Second time they got something different. Third got something different. It's so inconsistent. You need strict policies and guidelines around racism, homophobia, and those type of things. Because unless those things are in place, people can use homophobic language for etc. And if there's no repercussion, then they're allowed to. So you need strict measures in place. So if somebody uses a homophobic comment in a club, there's a consistent, for example, 2-week ban or something like that, or it's developed around that. But we need to start setting parameters around the use of homophobia, discrimination, and those type of things.
Great. Well, Dr. Ryan Storr, Research Fellow at Swinburne University and co-founder of Proud to Play, thank you so much for joining us today on The Latest. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much to Dr. Ryan Storr for joining us today on The Latest. If you've enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend. Send the link to the episode over. Let them know how you need to listen to this. You can also, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, leave us a review. It really does help get the word out there about what we do, and it helps tell the algorithm, hey, this is a good show. You should listen to it. If you want to make sure you don't miss an episode, you can subscribe in your podcast app of choice so you get notifications every time a new episode releases. If you want to suggest someone to be interviewed on the podcast, shoot us an email. We're at info@lgbtiqhealth.org.au. Just make sure you put the word podcast in the subject line so we know where to send the email. If this podcast has raised any issues for you, you can contact QLife, which provides Australia-wide anonymous LGBTI peer support and referral for people wanting to talk about a range of issues. You can contact QLife on 1-800-184-527 or head to qlife.org.au to access the web chat. We've got links for you in the show notes. My name's Triana Butler. Thanks so much for being here. I'll catch you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.